Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host, as always. And today we are joined by returning guest, Matt Clark, the chief rainmaker and driving force behind the Virtual Edge. Matt transforms the B2B sales landscape with his innovative done-for-you LinkedIn lead system. Specializing in boosting B2B sales opportunities, Matt's method guarantees an impressive increase of 5 to 10 new opportunities each month within just 90 days, all managed in a mere 30 minutes per day. His expertise encompasses B2B sales coaching, social selling, lead gen, and personal branding. Matt's story is one of dedication to digital marketing mastery, offering a streamlined approach for his clients to soar in sales without the burden of traditional marketing strategies. His proven LinkedIn Rainmaker lead system not only elevates lead generation, but transforms how businesses engage and grow in the digital age. I've asked Matt to come back to our show today to continue his story and talk about social selling, lead generation, personal branding, and doing business in today's digital world. So Matt, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How you doing?
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, doing amazing, man. Jeez, just listening to that bio, I should shorten it to Matt's a cool guy and helps people get leads on LinkedIn. Boom.
it's powerful to harness technologies and to use them. And especially once you learn what's effective. And this is your second time around. For people that are new, maybe you could talk about how did you get started? Were your parents in sales and lead generation? Is this a family business? Were you sitting around the table and your parents are like, Matt, sell us this pen? Or what? How'd you even get started?
Yeah, so it's interesting. My parents were in sales, both of them, for a while, and I didn't even realize that was a thing. And then when I was about 17, I went into, so I've never really worked for anybody before. Everything I've done has been purely on commission. In fact, having this business is the first time I've ever earned a salary. And I started off as a waiter. And then I went over to the UK to go and do door-to-door sales, selling gas and electric. I figured that out that, wow, I can actually sell and I enjoy it. And I love the thrill and the chase. And then came back to South Africa, worked for a company that sold telephone systems door to businesses. And we absolutely blew up. We took that company from a tiny little warehouse in Cape Town to opening up branches in four major provinces. And I was key in opening up all of those and running those, a regional manager of two of them. And then I started my own company. We built that up to $6 million a year, all direct sales, no marketing, no advertising, just knocking doors. And I got to a stage where I was like, I really want to be able to travel. I want to have freedom. I want to be able to live an awesome lifestyle, pretty much what I'm doing right now. And I started going to all of these big speaking events with all these speakers and selling all their stuff. And I was like, you know, what I'm looking for is what are they vibes? And I started emulating that. So we then became Infusionsoft certified partners. How's my connection? Is it okay?
You're okay. You said something about then we were looking for, and then you cut out, and then you came back and said that you became Infusionsoft certified partners. We missed that part.
Got it. I was really just looking to create a lifestyle and be able to earn money from anywhere in the world and travel, pretty much doing what we're doing now. Right. And so I discovered Infusionsoft, and that kind of got me into the game of helping people, because I was thinking, I know how to build sales processes. I know how to run sales processes. Let's go and help other businesses implement this, because you can automate it without having to hire salespeople. I was like, oh my God, this thing is like mind blowing. And so I dived into that and we realized that, cool, we can automate their sales process, but the next problem is, okay, I need leads. So we started going down that route. And Facebook we didn't crack the Facebook code. We didn't crack the YouTube code. We cracked the LinkedIn code. Because for me, it was like virtually knocking doors. I could find the person, connect with them, have a conversation, get them on a call, make an offer. And I thought we were doing that. And we're like, probably other people need that as well. And so we started inviting people to come and join us. They started joining us. I remember like how we actually launched the whole thing. I did a post in a group of people who were my ideal clients. And I said to them, hey guys, I'm doing I'm going to be putting out a brand new training, building a new course. And I'd love to know what you want to hear about the most, either getting clients from Facebook, getting clients from LinkedIn, or building systems to automate your sales process. And so we had about 75 comments, sorry, about 200 comments on that post. I then reached out to every person, got as many of them on a call as I could, figured out what they needed. And we landed up doing about $75,000 in cash collected from that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It was awesome. And then I was like, okay, I better go now and build this course, right? Because everyone wanted the LinkedIn thing. So I was like, let me go build this course.
Yeah. I didn't make 75 grand, but I did that. I did two posts on Facebook once on a Monday and a Friday. And I collected about five to seven grand US for this is years ago now. And then I was like, Oh, now I got to go make the course. Okay. But now people knew, right? It's not that nobody knew, but it was a proof of concept, right? Money people booked me down for this.
100%. So yeah, I had to go build the thing out. And then we've just been evolving it as we go through. And now it's at a stage where we've implemented automation. We've used AI. Over the past 7 years, we've built out all of our processes, our systems, our frameworks, not just to get leads, but also to convert those leads and then even do it at scale, running events, getting joint ventures, partners. And so that's what we've built our system around.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So I love how organic it was and grassroots. This is almost like the Elon Musk model. I say this to people when people are like, oh, I don't have money and I don't have a factory and I don't have this, is that Elon Musk did $300 million.
Yep.
Selling a car. He had no team to build and no factory to make. Now he had a minimum viable product. Fair enough.
Yep.
But you can do a lot with PowerPoint, you know what I'm saying? And Adobe Illustrator, like in Canva.
And a vision.
And a vision. $300 million, in case anybody didn't hear that. So next time someone's, I'm broke, like you just need like $300 million with no team and no factory. And it's going to be 2 years till we deliver. What you really need is you need to be in touch with your market. And you need to have something that they want and
exactly
be able to fulfill on that promise. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I know that you've got lots of people. I know there's people that are like, oh, the Rainmaker, the LinkedIn Rainmaker system doesn't work. And then you dig into the weeds. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but we're in a similar business, different. But
yeah.
There's lots of people that are like, your stuff is garbage. It doesn't work. And you start looking at, actually, nobody wants what you're selling. That's the problem. You're trying to impose your will on the world versus serve people. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like, how do people get that wrong and what do you do to fix it?
Yeah, I'd say one of the biggest things is that people build things that other people don't want. And is there a lot of noise? They're doing some construction there. You good?
No, you're good. You got no noise. We're good.
Okay, amazing. So people go out and they get this idea and they're like, all right, I'm going to go and build this thing and put it out into the marketplace and everyone's going to buy it, right? The thing that they miss, the critical step that they miss is doing the market research, right? So if you are, and we do this market research every time we want to launch a new offer, every time we're testing new messages, every time we are looking for more joint venture partners, want to run an event, like we don't just put it out there and hope that people are going to buy. We go out and we do market research. And so when people come back to us sometimes and they're like, oh, this thing didn't work for me or whatever it is, we dive into it. I'm like, but you missed the market research. You've put something together. How do you know if anyone wants it? And the moment that we go and take them through that process of doing the market research, getting customer feedback, getting market feedback, then things start taking off. And sometimes it's as simple as how you position what it is that you do. It can literally be, we've seen guys go from zero engagement, zero connection, zero anything with the message that they've been putting out there for the past 2 years. We changed with one guy in particular I'm thinking about, we changed four words in his title, right? And we focused, so what we did was we focused on the outcome instead of the service that he was selling. And it completely changed everything. He did $200,000 in 2 months.
I love that. Yeah, as another example, I don't know, I may have the name wrong. People can fact check me on this. I was told that the original title for Think and Grow Rich was, here's a Moodle for your noodle. It was flopped. And then they made it Think and Grow Rich. And
yeah. You see it all the time. You've got to test these things out. You've got to see what the markets are responding to.
So what would you suggest if someone's struggling right now? What's the crash course?
saying. Crash courses, we take people through a process called the ask interview. So we literally get them to reach out to people who are potential ideal clients for them and say to them, hey, I'm busy doing market research for something, a new product I'm launching, a new offer, whatever it is. And you fit the ideal client. You fit the ideal client that I'm looking for. Would you be open to doing a 15-minute call where we can just go through what's going on in the marketplace? I promise you there'll be no sales pitch. And right. As a thank you for your time, here is something of value, right? So not a coaching call with you, not your time. It's a resource that they can use. Maybe you want to connect them to somebody that they're looking for. Maybe you want to give them a PDF or a video or whatever. So what we do when we run these things, one of my favorite ones, and we use these as lead magnets as well, is I'll say to them, I'll give you the case study of how we generated 181 leads in 12 days. Or I'll show you how we added $650,000 to our business using webinars on LinkedIn. But it also gives me an opportunity, if it's something valuable to them, and if I know they're showing interest in that, already it opens up the door to further conversations with them. So now you can turn market research into leads, but you're not doing it in a bait and switch kind of way, in a salesy way. Right. You're doing it by adding value and then following up and saying, hey, did you pick up anything from that you liked? Mm-hmm. And very often we see on average, about 50% of the people that you do these ask interviews with will turn around and say, so can you help me with this?
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that's a really powerful way to do it. And you can spend a lot of time cackling as a mad scientist alone, but until you get out and put it in the marketplace and get real world feedback, that's how many interviews do you recommend people do?
At least 10. So you can couple this up. So some people will take the easy route and just run a poll. Now, if you don't have a large enough audience, a poll's not going to give you enough market data to be able to go and say, okay, this is definitely the thing. So what I always recommend is that we start with a poll. So you do the poll like that. You also send out direct messages and emails, right? This is market research time. So you're not worried if there's going to be sales or whatever it is. This is, I'm getting my message, my positioning, my offer dialed in.
Right.
But ultimately what happens is that people reach out. So if you're running a poll on LinkedIn, as an example, then anyone that likes, comments, or engages, you then say, hey, would you mind getting on a call for the market research so we can dive deeper into this?
Right. I love that. Let's talk about market research some more, if you don't mind. I spent the beginning of the pandemic, I spent about $50,000 to hire 10 people to help me go through all the academic literature on business success. We uncovered 8 critical success factors. One of them is market intelligence. And we started, after we identified the 8, my followers already know this, right? But after we identified the 8, we dove into each individual and we took a look at market intelligence. And we said, what are the questions that you really have to have pen down? So first off, I think what you suggested is fantastic. And I think that's the best. It almost reminds me of the dream one, like make a list of 100 of your ideal clients and go out and talk to them. That's such a powerful, go talk to them. Now, I don't have a structured process. Here's the interview you do. Here's the questions you ask. And here's the message you send. I think a lot of people would really benefit from that. But I can help some of the people that maybe are wondering some of the other things that our research showed, which is, first off, you really have to identify the problem to be solved and why it's a problem. And then you have to identify who wants the problem solved and why. And so you have to know who's affected and be able to describe them ideally in a stereotype. That was a big key for me, being able to think in stereo. Because normally, I don't discriminate, DEI. But you need to think of stereotypes. Like, it's just the way it works. You got soft mom, the high-powered CEO that's the health nut. Like this sort of, right? Like the stereotypes, they just help. That really combines demographics and psychographics when you have a stereotype, right? And then you need to know the cost of not fixing it, because if it's not a painful problem or if it's not an expensive problem, then it might be, what do we say? Nobody argues about fixing a bleeding neck.
Exactly.
No one's comparing prices when their neck is bleeding. But if they stub their toe and you're like, I'll fix it for $1,000, they might say, I'll shop around. What's the cost of fixing the problem? Who else fixes this problem and how? Who are the top 10 solution providers? What's their sales data that you can estimate? Where are their locations? Who's their target market? What are their offers and price points? And is there any industry benchmarks that you can get off of, like revenue, ad performance, et cetera? For example, I was once considering setting up an outsourcing center. And then I looked at the industry data and I thought that maybe it wasn't something that I wanted to participate in. For some people,
exactly.
What I wanted, that wasn't it. Another thing that's important is the emerging technology and trends. What are some of those coming out? And two new that we just added was, what are the current and upcoming regulations, and what is the geopolitical situation in that field? Those are two new ones that we added. And then obviously after that, now you create your strategic plan and go out and start talking to people. And I think what you said is just so powerful, because it really just, I have an embarrassing confession to make. It's a painful secret. It really I'm not like just hyping this up, but it's something that I'm so ashamed of it. I'm not even going to give specifics, but I've spent way too much time, energy, and money paying for ads to send people to pages to then look at stats and heat maps and figure things out. When if I had just picked up the phone, if I had just hopped on Zoom.
That's the thing.
And it's a shot, like I'm introvert. I'm shy. Yeah, but do you want to trade like 1 week for 8 months?
Yeah.
Do you want to take 8 months or do you want to take a week? Suck it up, princess. Wear your ovaries on the outside. Like that's.
And I got a good example of this for you as well, because it's so true. If we really look at what are four things needed to define an ideal client? They need to be in massive pain. They need to have purchasing power. Okay. Yeah. And be able to make decisions. They need to be easy to target, and it needs to be in a growing market.
Yeah.
Okay. So very often we work with management consultants, leadership development teams, and the people that they work with is the management, as an example. But the management aren't the people that make decisions. And very often what they do is they try to go out to HR to sell them their training, to get in the budget or whatever it is. Whereas if you change the positioning to solve the problem for the CEO and show the CEO how he can reach his goals of driving business revenue, it bypasses everything else.
Right.
Right. So you've got to take that market research and that data that you get and then turn it into your positioning. So you brand yourself on LinkedIn, not necessarily as a leadership development coach or consultant, but now as how you help the CEOs achieve their goals in a certain time frame through a system or methodology, right? Or right. Solve a big pain point. And then when you do that, your entire conversation changes, because now you're not targeting HR or management and showing them how your communication skills can be better, or how your interpersonal relationships could be better, or how people could stop working on silos. You're talking to the CEO about how to drive change, how to drive revenue, how to drive business growth, how to increase revenue and decrease time spent on crap, I think is the technical term. So putting systems in place that's gonna increase productivity and optimize performance. So there's an example of that.
I love that. So you'd said that massive pain, purchasing power, growing
easy
market, easy to target. That was the one I missed. Yeah, that part is really important, because you might make money hand over fist from blonde haired tennis players that are left-handed and like pink shoes, but how are you gonna target that?
Referrals, like go to 10, even then that's okay. I'd be thinking differently. I'd be thinking about, okay, if we can't target them directly, and this is why I love LinkedIn, is because it's not a social media platform. It is a networking platform. So in that case, I'd be reaching out to tennis coaches. I'd be reaching out to tennis associations. I'd be reaching out to sporting clothing goods, racket suppliers. I'd be reaching out to those people and figuring out how could I partner with those people to help them elevate their brand by getting me in front of their clients.
Yeah, I love that. Let's talk about this. You seem to know a thing or two about LinkedIn. What are some of the biggest mistakes that people are making? For me, I use it in a sniper. My staff uses it for me a lot, but I use it kind of in sniper purposes, because my inbox is constantly hit up with the same message all the time. And I think people here are nodding with us. But they're like, yeah, it's hi, I want to buy my thing and hop on a call. Here's the link. And what are they doing wrong?
So the first thing it comes down to is relevance. You need to be relevant to the people who you're targeting. And if you use that example that I gave you now with the management consultant, and if we said you had leadership development or whatever it is, and they reached out to the CEO, he's going to say, no, you need to speak to HR about that.
Right.
Even though he's the decision maker, he's fobbing you off to somebody else because it's just another person sending me another leadership development consultant, sending me a message trying to sell me their services, right? He doesn't care. So you need to be relevant and understand the problems that they want solved. Now, here's what everyone tries to do, and this is a big mistake, is they try and solve all the problems at the same time. They try and position themselves to solve all the problems at the same time and describe everything that their business does, right? We don't need to do that. When you're positioning yourself on LinkedIn, we focus on what we call the power of one. Solve one big problem for one ideal client, okay? The purpose of this is not to showcase everything that you do. The purpose of this is to open up a conversation, is to get them connecting with you and saying, hey, this looks interesting. Maybe we can talk about it more. So we actually call this the pickup line, right? And you think about it like that. If you're going out to a bar, and obviously before I was married, and you want to go and pick up someone, then you start with an opener. And if they don't like the opener, they're going to move on, or they're going to tell you to move on. If they like the opener, then the conversation continues, right? Doesn't mean it's in the bag, you've sealed the deal. It means that you've got the first step going. So that's the first mistake, is the relevance. The second mistake is that people don't respect the sales process, right? And they don't. What I mean by that is that they're using copy and paste templates. Like you said, you're just getting that copy and paste template from every person. They connect with you and say, here's my stuff, get on a call or buy my thing. But if you think about any social interaction, right, we don't just go and meet someone and jump into bed with them. We don't just go and meet someone, get married to them. We don't meet a potential business partner and say, hey, let's start a business, boom, get going. You build the relationship up. Mm-hmm. And so you can shorten that cycle by being relevant and by coming up and by being personal, but you want to respect the sales process. So instead of just going in and jumping in, connecting and starting to sell your stuff, make yourself valuable, open up a conversation, treat them as a person first, get to know them as a person first. Because I don't know about you, but I only do business with people if I like them, mm-hmm. right? If I don't like someone, I don't want you in my circle of people.
And the people you like, you're very forgiving to. So if your friend, exactly. Like, hey, I remember this, I was a kid, but I remember my parents, they were into 10 pin bowling, and they called him Fuzzy. Some guy from the bowling alley got this new thing. And I remember he came to our house and he just did the worst. I don't know if everyone here knows, what was it? The slap chop, like the demo thing. He brought he was literally a vacuum cleaner salesman. Oh, there's anything wrong with that. But I just remember this guy was in my living room spilling stuff all over our floors and doing all these demo stuff. And my parents, they were like, what am I trying to say? You could clearly tell he was very nervous and this was rehearsal for him. And my parents were very forgiving. What I mean is that when people like you, you don't have to worry. They say people's biggest fear is public speaking, that booing off stage. It's less fearful. Less scary. If you did something in front of your mom, like, you wouldn't have to worry about her disowning you. That's right.
100%.
Yeah.
And it's so true. We've tested out some automation campaigns. We test everything out ourselves first, because I don't mind if I mess something up, then I can go back to those people and say, look, I'm testing out new stuff. Did you like it or not? Mm-hmm. Simple as that. I've had people come back to me and be like, dude, is this like a copy and paste message? We had the other day where my business partner reached out to him and I reached out to the guy, and he did a post on this on his LinkedIn. And he was like, dude, he actually said, so what happens? What do you do with this if you're getting messages from exact same message from the same people? And he tagged us in it, and it was shone a bit of a bad light. And I just responded to him and I was like, okay, so two things. Number one, we're testing out some stuff, so we're making the mistake so you don't have to. Number two, we're busy with this conversation, aren't we? And he was like, okay. And then we got in a conversation, actually landed up getting on a call, and he became a client.
That's great. Yeah. You can't be afraid. I always say that Dr. Seuss's Green Eggs and Ham is a great sales Bible. It really is. It really is. A lot of people laugh when they say that, but look, people don't know. This Matt has clearly been in the game a long time, and he is wholeheartedly, Dr. Seuss, Green Eggs and Ham, Sales Bible.
And it's like,
Right.
Should be perfect. And people expect perfect and they want to see perfect. I'm like, well, if you're always perfect, where the hell do you test stuff out? Where do you experiment on stuff? Where do you dial your stuff in? Right. There's no such thing as perfect. Yeah. Right. There's only the pursuit of excellence.
Yeah. I had a friend say that before. I was nervous about promoting it. Actually, this is right before I had a book that hit number one on Amazon. I was like, yeah, but what if? Remember, he was like, eyeballs must be sacrificed. He was just like, you have to like put it out there. Because I was like, yeah, but people will see it. And what if they don't? Eyeballs will have to be sacrificed in the name of greater good of making this work. And that always stuck with me. Like anytime I'm nervous, I don't know. Because, you know, I got an email list. You get it. You send an email to 10,000 people and you get all the hater. Like all the opt-outs come right away. And you're like, they hate me. I'm terrible. Like, just eyeballs got to be sacrificed. You can always
make. I love that.
Yeah, you just eyeballs must be sacrificed.
I am so going to use that in my coaching calls with my clients. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, that one's free. The first one's always free. Kidding. So, all right. So, what are some of the skills and behaviors? Like I think we hit on a couple, like indirectly, but to really hit the nail on the head, what do you think are some of the skills and behaviors that people really got to master? Because it's not it's not a movie. It's not, he whispered the magic thing in my ear and now I've got a magic power. It's an iterative thing, right? So it's a skill. It's like a trade, whether you're a plumber or an electrician. So what are the skills and behaviors that people really got to get good at?
So a couple of things. I would say implementing the ask interview as a regular thing that you do in your business, right? Once a month, do it. Right. It generates clients, keeps you in touch with your marketplace. Make sure your offers are aligned. Make sure your message is aligned. Because in today's day and age with all the technology that's coming out, your market could shift like that.
Yes. Right?
If you're not in touch with your market, it's going to slip right out from under you.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say is consistency. I see so many people where they get a bee in their bonnet and they're like, all right, I'm going to go and crack this LinkedIn thing or crack this funnel thing or crack this whatever it is. And I've been guilty of this too.
I mean it.
Okay.
This year, I'm going to give up this and I mean it. This time.
Yeah. This time. And listen, I've been guilty of this too, right? I'm also not perfect. I've done this myself. But it's that consistency in doing one thing that is really going to drive this thing home. So the next one, which leads into this, is niche down, right? Most of the clients that we work with need 1 to 5 clients a month to hit their goals, but they're trying to market to everybody, right? So niche down, be more relevant to your ideal clients, solve one big problem and take them through the sales process. If you do this thing, you can literally spend 30 minutes a day building up your entire business and having enough lead flow that you never have to worry again.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Being everything to everyone, let's go and be the specialist for someone. Because there's a lot of someones in this world. I ran a crazy search as an example for a webinar that we did last night, talking about how specific you need to be. And we looked at it, that we did a search for CEOs of IT companies in North America between 500 and 1,000 employees. There were 3,000 results. That's a very specific audience. There's 3,000 people to talk to. So now we don't just want to go and send them a blanket spam message. We want to make sure, so run a small test group, do the market data, do the ask interviews, then position your profile like that, and then go and create the message that is going to get them actually interacting with you.
Can you talk about profiles? Let's talk about that. That's a hot 100%. I see that all the time.
Absolutely.
What's the purpose of a LinkedIn profile?
Purpose of a LinkedIn profile is very simple. It is there to showcase what you do. It's there to tell people how to work with you before they even talk to you. And your most important piece of this is your picture, your banner, and your headline, or your pickup line, as we call it. The reason being is that if you come up in a search, that's the first thing people see. Okay. So that's got to be sexy enough that they're going to click on it and go and read the rest, right? Think of it like a sales page or a landing page or an email. The first line sells the next line, sells the next line, sells the next line. So this is respecting the process. So if you've just slapped something together or written it as a CV, which is, or resume is what most people do, and talking all about themselves, they make it very egocentric. Mm-hmm. We want to turn this into a client-centric landing page, okay? Which means that your headline needs to talk about them and the problems you solve for them. Your about section needs to show them how you take them from their pain to where they're trying to get to their goals through a system or methodology, right? You want to showcase case studies, video case studies of clients that you've worked with that have got results. You want to use the opportunity of your experience to further dive deeper into what it is that you do and how you help them get there, maybe showcasing a different part of it, of what you do. And you want to be actively going out and getting recommendations, actually asking people for recommendations. I can't tell you how many of our clients that we work with, and we've got tons of case studies, testimonials, and everything. I've been a bit slack on the recommendation side of things lately because we've been focusing on getting more video testimonials.
Right. Well, those are
really- But we use that as a massive part of our journey.
I love this. So what do you think is going to happen with AI? Do you think we're all going to be replaced by smart bots and chat bots and automated sales phone people?
I think to a degree that will happen, yes. Will it happen entirely? No, because it's still people buying, right? I think there are certain industries that will happen too, right? Where they can automate the entire process, especially like products. Where they don't need a lot of human interaction. We literally now, as an example of this, is we're heading to Vietnam next, and our entire e-visa application process is done with AI. The support is an AI chatbot, right? And it sounds like a human.
That's cool.
It's so cool. So I think there are definitely industries where they are in need of that. Right. But when we start looking at service-based industries, where we start looking at anything that involves people, mm-hmm. right, the people who don't embrace AI, who don't embrace the technology, are going to be left out. Right. I can tell you right now.
Oh, yeah. Accounting and calculators. Back in the day, if you were a bookkeeper, you had to do the math yourself. And then a better tool came out and the productive people became more productive and the less productive lost their excuse for billing a client for 3 days to do 2 + 2 = 4. And exactly. I don't think it's so different. I think it's disruptive, but what I love is we create so much value. Like I'm buying a bunch of materials to build a house and the sum of the pieces will be more valuable as a whole.
Exactly.
And
beautiful example.
Value out of nothing. It's worth more than what it was. So again, it comes back to the whole, nobody wants to buy my stuff, but you're trying to get a sponsor to pay you to do what you want to do versus figure out how to serve people.
100%. How we've embraced AI in our business, it's been a game changer for us. It's been a game changer for our clients. So not only do we use it, we use a combination of automation and AI for the outreach, right? When we're reaching out on LinkedIn, it'll find their profiles. It'll actually then go and write a personalized message based on how we've trained it, the frameworks that we've put in. It'll read their profile and write a personalized message as if a person's written it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's set number one. The next thing is that it'll also enrich their data. So it'll go onto their LinkedIn profile, pull their phone number and their email that are linked to that profile, if that's available. And then we can send an AI customized email to them as well.
Yeah.
So that's on that end for the lead generation and the outreach. And even when people are responding. So what we've done is we've built out our response frameworks. So notice I don't say scripts, right? Because we're not using template frameworks.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So we put these frameworks into the AI. So now what happens, and this is why you can manage in 30 minutes a day, is that if people are responding, you don't have to go and sit there and type a response. You click a button and it'll write it for you.
Yeah. Do you have auto reply? Do you have auto reply in yet?
There is auto reply in there. It's not quite where I want it to be. Yeah. So I'm not like specifically talking about that. I'd rather people, because also, like I said, our clients deal, they need 1 to 5 clients a month. So you can spend 30 minutes a day clicking some buttons.
That's not fair enough. We dove into AI too. Sorry, this is your interview, but we dove into AI too and added a bunch of AI systems. Even this podcast, we don't subscribe to other services. We do pay fees, but we whatever other podcasters are paying for the tools that they're using to use AI for whatever, like we built our own and yeah. We did a lot of AI with that. And I came across something that could auto reply to emails. And so what this guy would do would have it be, sure, let's great. Pick it. Do any of these times work? And like the link, but what it's not, like you said, it's not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. It can't quite either catch them all or it just comes across weird.
A little too robotic still.
That's why. No, stop. I wanted it to work so bad. I really did. I worked hard on that. I really did. But it's not my main business and the show must go on. So I was like, I'm probably going to pick it next week.
But the cool thing is that because of the way that it's set up in the frameworks and everything, you can have a VA in the Philippines run the thing for you because there's no more language barrier. Everything's there. They can just click buttons. So you can have somebody run this thing for you and you can pick up the conversation at the relevant time. So it's completely changed the way that lead generation has been running for us. And then on top of it, over the last 7 or 8 years, however long we've been in business, we've built out all of our frameworks, all of our templates, all of our scripts to help people build out their signature solutions, their offers, all the ancillary things around it, how to get the ideal client dialed in, video scripts, all of that we used to have as frameworks and templates where people had to go and fill in and think about it, and it would take 3 to 4 months. We've built all of that into AI where now we can literally take them through a process, ask them a couple of questions, it'll give them the answers. You then take that one to the next one, that one to the next one, and it creates your next step. So now what used to take 3 to 4 months takes a week to 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's powerful. I know exactly. I don't know what you're doing, but I know how powerful that can be. And what a game for people. I think this all comes back though, because I'm not trying to play devil's advocate here, but we haven't had AI, but it's been possible to have documented, like I'm sorry, I know I'm verbose. When I had my martial arts school back in 2010, 2012, when people signed up for a free class for the free 30 days on my site, it was name, email, and then there was a drop down. Yep. That drop-down menu gave them 6-7 options. And those 6-7 options put them in a personalized email sequence follow-up based off of their interests. So I'm saying all this, like I said, not quite to play devil's advocate, but like AI makes it exciting, cool, and new again. But there's been ways to do this forever. And it goes back to what you said when we talked about the must-have skills and behaviors. You talked about ask interviews monthly. Niching down and consistency. That's the consistency. I'm just saying, just consistency, because they'll do it. I'm going to do this today. And they do it today. And then they don't follow through. And then they don't get through the 2 weeks to get it, like this stuff. So I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. I just want to just put an asterisk exclamation point next.
I agree.
The consistency.
But think what, and both you and I come from the Infusionsoft world. You think about what we had to do to create all of that in the past.
Back in the day.
Oh my gosh. It was like, yeah, you could do it, but it was like a nightmare to create that you'd have to spend forever doing. And then if one little thing breaks, the whole sequence falls apart.
Yep.
And I think that's what we love so much about this so far is that, yes, it's always been possible. And we've gone down the routes of being Infusionsoft certified partners, HubSpot certified partners, using GHL, all of these things. But you still need to be able to build. And what I'm talking about here on this side of things is building your ideal client, your message, your positioning, your offer, your signature solution. These are all things that AI can help you with, but you've still got to put your thinking into it and your unique methodology. Mm-hmm. And so the way that we did this is that it doesn't just spit something out based on a template or whatever. It actually creates something personal and unique to each and every single person so that they can have their own power of one. They can have their own voice, their own message, their own offers. And that's where you get
tested on 10 people. And either they're making it or they're not.
Then you plug it into the automation system and let the automation and AI book calls.
Yeah, I love it. 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 So I'm reaching for the next question here because I feel like we've done so much in this short call that I almost want to recap everything that you've talked about. We've talked about, first off, your target market. They have to have massive pain, be easy to target, has to be a growing market, which you can check with Google Trends, put some keywords in there. Is it growing or shrinking? Look at the last 5 years plus. You need a decision maker. I made this decision. I tried to sell something to a university once, and there were like 10 committees of 10 people, and it was a nightmare. They have to have purchasing power. What else do we talk about? That you need to be doing the ask interviews monthly, consistently, and have consistency, and then niche down, solve one big problem, and walk them through a sales process. I love how you talk about be a specialist. I think that's really important. Nobody here is wearing shoes. They're wearing running shoes, jogging, running shoes, hiking shoes, dress shoes. I wear a special shoe because my foot is this funny shape. It's a specialty item. I think that's incredibly powerful. What do you feel about the statement that all sales problems can be solved with more lead gen? Would you agree or disagree?
I love it, but I also think it depends on how your business is structured. I think all sales problems, and it depends what resources you've got available, because you might have, and we've done this in the past as well, where we've got a list of people already and we reach out. We don't do any new lead generation. We reach out to past clients or past people and make them a new offer in a different way that maybe they didn't resonate with before, but now gets them coming back and staying on with us for longer. So yes and no. But coming from a door-to-door sales background, I'm like, just go knock more doors. I'm always like, just knock more doors, man. Knock more doors.
Yeah. Okay. That, I love that. Because it also talks about going deep with people. So there's two sides of this coin, where I think in lead gen and B2B sales, it's always focused on knocking on the new door. But I actually really love what you mentioned there about going back. And you said this a couple of times. Hey, I was testing some stuff. Did you like it or not?
Yeah.
Like a recent case study of mine, I helped with a client improve their retention by over 106%.
Amazing.
It was creating about 7 different sort of, in various ways, lost win-back campaigns that are triggered at different timelines for different reasons or different behaviors. Someone hasn't bought in this amount of time and they click, versus if they just haven't bought for 2 months type thing, versus if they haven't bought in over a year, and having set up. So now the collective of all those campaigns, we're getting 20% more lost customers come back here, 7% of lost customers come back there, 13% there. The culmination of those is 106%. And so I love that part of it, because sometimes they already have the leads. The leads are watching your social media stories. The leads are liking posts. They're commenting. The leads are people you're seeing on the street there. So what you're lacking is perhaps a process to follow to interview these people to see if they're interested enough to make a purchase, to see if your assumptions on your target market match up, line up.
Totally. And to add to that as well is that we think about business probably a little bit differently to what most people, where they are focusing on, I need sales, I need clients, I need to make X amount of money or whatever it is. We look at lifetime value. And I actually got this from a mentor of mine, super smart guy. He's built over 40 companies and taken 10 of them past the 8-figure mark. He's someone worth listening to. He knows his stuff. And what he said to me, which I'll share with you guys here, is that he said, Matt, I don't build my business so that I don't build my business, make the money, and then try and live life along the way. He's like, what I do is I decide what kind of life that I want and how much money I need to create that life. And then I go and build what he calls his boxes, right? So what that means is that there are 3 ways to make money. There's businesses, there's paper assets, so stocks, bonds, crypto, all of that stuff. And then there's real estate, commercial and residential. So typically what you're going to do is you're going to see how many boxes do I need to stack in order to get to the income that I need to live the life that I want. That also removes the emotional attachment to it. So if you look at a box and you're okay, a box is not performing, either I've got to fix the box or I've got to get rid of the box. Or if something's working really well, okay, I need to do more of that, less of that. And if we think about it, like pretty much everybody has got a couple of boxes that they're busy stacking. And every business owner generally has a couple of boxes they're stacking. They might be dabbling in some crypto or some stocks. They might own some properties or whatever. But they're looking at it like, okay, I'm building my assets. And instead of saying, how do I build this thing differently? If I want my business to be the driving force of that, what do I need this box to do so that it can either feed the other boxes, help stack the other boxes, or create new boxes? So removing that emotional attachment to it actually is so freeing, because then you can really look at it for what it is instead of what you believe it to be.
Yeah, whether you do it or someone else does it, it must get done. A friend of mine wanted to sell his business. His goal was to sell his business for over 7 figures and then go back to MIT and have that feather in his cap. And one of the tips that he got was from an old timer that said, when you wake up in the morning, all those to-do items on your list, as long as they're on your to-do list and not someone else's, you'll never be able to sell your business. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about in that respect, that, you know, you talk about this. A lot of people run businesses, they're technicians. They're good at doing the thing the business does. They're not necessarily creators of something that serves society. There's a difference. When you go through a McDonald's drive-thru, no one tells you, hey, Sally's sick today, so drive-thru is closed. They've organized it that they have a labor pool big enough in the facilities that it runs on schedule, whether Sally is healthy or not. There's people that can jump in. Everyone's cross-trained. It solves that problem for the community. And I think that's really powerful. Now, for LinkedIn, do you have to hop on phones? Is that the way to do it? Is it possible to drive sales from LinkedIn without having to get on calls with people?
It is possible. Typically, if you're getting on LinkedIn and using it as a lead generation platform, you're networking with people. So it is the better way to do it. Also, on top of that is you want to be having a high lifetime value of a client. So at least $5,000. So the question you've got to ask yourself is your offer or your lifetime value high enough that it's worth getting on a call with somebody? It's about building relationships. I always look at it like it's high value stuff. So for me, it's worth getting on a call with someone that's of high value, because I'm respecting the sales process, I'm respecting the other person's time and their money. And I'm also respecting myself. I'm not getting on calls with people where it's not valuable for my time and not valuable for them. I'd rather just say to them, hey, listen, let's have a chat over here and let's see what we can do. And if not, then I'll rather point you in the right direction.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. Matthew, I want to be respectful of your time. Is there anything I haven't asked you so far that I should have asked you?
I think we've covered quite a lot. I think maybe the one thing that I can add is just maybe a note for everyone that's listening, and just say that when you get your systems, you can have that life of freedom. I built this thing, 7 or 8 years ago. My wife and I have been traveling for the past 2 years. The business has been growing. Customers have been getting amazing success. And a lot of it has to do with us being in the visionary space. And like you said, if those things on your to-do list are still on your to-do list and on anyone else's, it's never going to grow. I just want to let everyone know that it is possible. It does require a different level of thinking. And yes, there are challenges along the way. But I tell you what, man, when we're traveling through Asia and when we're traveling all around the world, sitting on beautiful beaches, and especially for this time zone where it's like everyone in the US only wakes up at about like 4 p.m. my time. Yeah. I've got an entire day to go and go for an adventure, go visit temples, go to the beaches. Like, it's a completely different way of thinking, and it just feels so wholesome. When I was traveling through the US, I was like, this is the worst time zone ever for me, because I literally wake up, right, and it's straight into work. And then you don't stop until 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. And then you're like, now I've got to eat. And then where's my time to exercise? And yeah, you try and build it in and everything, but it's difficult because there's always so much going on.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just, there's other options. If you're feeling, if you don't like what you're doing or the way that it's being done, there are always other options and there are always choices.
I love that. I love that. I love that. Matt, thank you for coming back again. If people want to find out more, if they want to get in touch, where are the best places for them to go?
Cool. So LinkedIn, obviously, Matt Clark Rainmaker. It's the same on Facebook, Matt Clark Rainmaker, same on Instagram, and then our website, thevirtualedge.com. And if you want, I can give you a link where we've got a couple of free resources that people can go and download and play with some of the AI tools and just get to see a little bit more about what we do.
Sure, sure, sure. So for those interested, go find Matt Clark on social media, Matt, MattClark. That's him if he's the Rainmaker. You can also check out thevirtualedge.com.
Yes.
Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always an honor and a pleasure, my friend, knowing that you have following your own direct reports, your own family, your own agenda, your own clients. Thank you for coming and sharing with me and mine so we can all do a little bit better.
Yeah, thanks for having me on and just having such a great interview. I even picked up a bunch of things from our conversation too. I've made a few notes of a couple little key sayings. Thank you for that too. And I hope this has been valuable for everybody. Much love.